Jason, we friends just having a conversation.
Wave your hands high.
Don't stop.
Wave your hands high.
Don't stop.
Welcome back to North Texas Music Fanatics. I'm Jason Janik. And today we've got a real fun one. This is somebody that I've worked with for quite a long time. Let's just kick straight into it. This is Gary Wiseman of Bowling for Soup.
Hey, thanks for having me over here.
Yeah, thank you. So tell me, because I know I first met you through Bowling for Soup.
Yep.
But I know that you were on the scene before that, because I did see somewhere along the way one of your earlier band CDs.
Yep.
Tell me, how did you get into music? Tell me about your pre-BFS days.
Pre-BFS days, how far you want to go back? I mean, I remember as a little kid, like, always being interested in music. There's a time I remember, like, at a bowling alley with my dad, and a Billy Joel song came on, which doesn't really sound like bowling alley music, but it was early 80s, like, you know. It happened. And I was like, that's cool.
Do you remember what song it was?
It was
still rock and roll to me.
It was maybe Easy Money.
Oh, that's a great one.
It was something on that record for sure. I just remember thinking, that's really cool. And my dad ended up having that record, and so I listened to that all the time. And that kind of got me into, like, fantasizing about, like, I want to be in a band. I had no idea what instrument I wanted to play or anything like that, but just it planted the seed. And, you know, fast forward years later, whenever I was in junior high, my best friend and I decided we were going to start a band. Neither one of us knew how to play anything, but we were going to start a band. And
that's how Duran Duran started, too. So you're in good company already.
Yeah. I mean, it just kind of it made sense. And we had no idea what we wanted to sound like or what we wanted to do or even how to play anything. But his aunt had a guitar that he could borrow. And so one of us was going to play guitar and one of us was going to play drums. And he had a guitar that he could borrow, so I had to play drums, and it just was fate. You know, that's how I picked up the drums. I begged my mom for a drum set. She said if I joined the school band, she'd buy me a drum set at Christmas. So I joined the school band in seventh grade, played marching band and symphonic band and symphony and all that all through high school. And we had a punk rock band, a little garage band, and ended up playing with that same guy and the same guitar player from the time I was 13 till the time I was 20.
Well, that's good. I did band in school as well, but I played trumpet, and unless I wanted to do a ska band,
yeah.
I don't think I had the same options as you did. Everyone needs a drummer.
Yeah. That, you know, that was kind of nice for me in that high school era. Cause like you said, there's a million guitar players, there's a million bass players, and there's very, very few drummers. So I was in a handful of other bands, but there was only one group of guys that we were serious about. I mean, we practiced multiple times a week, and you know, unfortunately, we didn't do that many shows, but we practiced all the time.
Well, they say practice makes perfect, and I mean, seeing you on stage now, you've clearly made things perfect. tell me, okay, so you had Gary and the Wise Men.
Gary and the Wise Men, and that sounds like, you know, I really think a lot about myself with that name. I didn't come up with it. That same group of guys, like I said, we played with. We had different singers throughout the time, but the same bass player, same guitarist. We had a few different band names. Each time a singer left, we'd kind of change the band's name. Anyways, when we went and recorded a group of songs, but we didn't have a band name. And Chris Burney from Bowling for Soup actually recorded those songs.
Oh, okay.
And he kind of just, like, he came up with the name. He's like, y'all should just call yourself Gary and the Wise Men. And
I like it. It reminds me of, like, Gary and the Playboys. It feels like you should be playing bar mitzvahs.
Yeah. We thought there's a funny juxtaposition, too, of, like, the band being named after the drummer. It's not the front man.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Well, there's always been humor injected into BFS, and I think that's one of the reasons why I felt so comfortable working with y'all, because I always had what I considered to be a sarcastic and funny and goofy side that came through with my photos. And you guys, I mean, you just dripped and oozed and exploded out the fun side of music.
I appreciate that, but let me throw a compliment back at you. Because it's always been fun to work with you, too, because most of the times we're doing photo shoots, you have cool ideas. You're like, hey, this is a cool concept or a place or a location, or I have this idea if y'all did that. And, you know, a lot of the times we do photo shoots with people and they're just like, well, stand here and make a funny face, or what do you want to do? And we can make that work, but, like, you have cool concepts.
Well, good. I appreciate hearing that. I will say this. I don't want to jump too far ahead, because we will talk about Bowling for Soup here in a little bit. I look back through all the different cover art.
Mm-hmm.
You can see you can see the differences in each album clearly. I love the cartoonish stuff that y'all have done with the last couple covers. I absolutely adored the one that I believe it was Nancy Newberry worked on, the one before the one we did. And then the earliest stuff just has a real kind of North Texas indie unsigned look to it that is just really nice to see. But to look at the progression just in the artwork of the albums, I really appreciated seeing that.
I appreciate that. We've had a lot of fun with the album covers. You know, some of them were more productions and kind of more stressful and headaches than others. I think you may be picking up on some of the new stuff, like the throwback kind of Texas vibe or indie vibe, or what you said is, you know, we are pretty much DIY now. A few years ago, we got off the record label, and now we crowdsource for records, and you know, we're kind of doing it on our own now. So
and
now
things are looking and sounding really good. And I mean, I don't want to trash major labels too much, but I've got to say that after y'all left Jive, it seems like the Bowling for Soup identity, it tightened up. It got better. It got faster.
I think I feel that too, to an extent. I think some of it may be just a streamlinedness of things. Like, we've always had fun. Our goal is to have fun. We say we'll do this as long as we're having fun. And the attitude used to be kind of like, it's us against the world, you know, because we're in this pop punk genre and we're in Texas and like all of our peer bands are on the coast, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And so like, we've always kind of had to do our own thing. So it's been us against the world. Whenever you get on the major label, it's kind of like us against the world and against the record label. So it's like, there's yeah, another fight. And I think, you know, I don't want to trash them either. There's some good stuff that came from that, but there was a lot of headaches and a lot of fights. But once we got away from that, it got back to like, now we can, it's not that we never did things that we wanted to do, but now we can do it how we want to do it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, from a photographer's aspect, because I've done my artwork's on four of your albums and then countless singles. My biggest issue was the bureaucracy of the big label. And I think you nailed it when you said streamlined post-label, because you don't have to deal with all that. Now you just have to deal with a handful of guys.
Yeah.
And you rock out.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And it's like that on every front, you know, touring or singles or this or that, you know. But it's like, I'm sure you were dealing with emails and phone calls from people that don't even know what the crap they're talking about on photos.
100%.
But they just have to put their two cents in there.
100%, yeah. Well, I mean, we could probably do three or four episodes just talking about our time spent together with BFS. But I want to go back and cover those early days.
Sure.
Who were you playing with? Where were you playing? You said that Chris Burney, you know, worked with you to produce the album. Where are you at this time?
Okay, so back in the early days, the Gary and the Wiseman days, we were teenagers. I mean, we started playing shows at bars and coffee houses and VFWs and skate parks.
Around Denton?
We were in Wichita Falls.
Okay.
That's where we grew up, went to high school. We would come down here and play shows if we could. Like I said, we played fewer shows than we wish. We didn't have any clue what we were doing. We were teenagers. Our goal was to get as good as we can, and that's why we practiced all the time. Our goal was to be better than everyone else. Like, we try to be technical and we try to be fast and we try to do something that like other bands would go, holy crap, how are they doing that? And I think we accomplished that. Whenever we'd play shows, the bands we'd play with would watch us and be like, what the crap? And, oh my God. But a lot of the times it just didn't work for the audience. You know, we weren't a band for the audience. We were a musician's band.
That's good in a way, at least at that age, because it gives you a chance to figure out where you're going and what you want to do.
Yeah, we didn't understand that there's songwriting and hooks and catchiness. We just were like, let's be technical. Let's be fast. Let's do stuff that we like. And you're right. I mean, it got us all to where we had great chops and set us up to where the next bands that we went to that actually had, I don't want to say business-minded, but business-minded. Like, the idea of, like, oh, we're not just doing this for ourselves. We have to have, people have to like us, right? And so once we got to those positions, we had the chops and understood music and could play tight, and we just were in a better spot to, we were a great group. We just didn't have the foresight to understand what we were doing.
Yeah, well, I mean, that practice shows, because I think with every Bowling for Soup song that I know, the song just really drives itself. It knows where it's going and it takes you with it. And I don't think a sloppy drummer can make that happen.
I appreciate that. You know, I think part of it too, we just work really fast together. I've been with Bowling for Soup since 99. I missed 4 years of the band, 5 years of the band. I wasn't the original drummer. But that being said, I knew everybody in BFS before BFS was BFS.
Well, and Ringo wasn't the first drummer sure. in the Beatles, but he's still Ringo.
Yeah.
You're still the Ringo of Bowling for Soup.
Yeah. Well, and the point I'm getting at is we've all known each other for so long. We're comfortable with each other. We know how each other thinks. And so when it's time to write songs, Jarrett writes the song. He comes up with an idea. He shows up to practice. And, you know, 20 minutes later, we have a song. So we're not the band that, like, diddles around for 2 weeks working on one song. And I've been in that band before. But things just happen real fast with us because we're all on the same page.
Sure. Well, I think, what if we hear one of those early songs?
Great.
All right. I'm going to go ahead and put that on right now, and we'll be right back. Okay, so let's kick into a little more of touring life. I mean, you guys have been on tour countless times by now. What's that like? Who all have you toured with? Who are some bands that you've really enjoyed doing that with? And who do you think you're going to invite out in the future?
We are a touring band. Back in the days, I'd say up to like 2004, 2003, we were doing 300 plus shows a year. So we've just always been road dogs.
You're like the Willie Nelson of punk pop.
Yeah. We're not quite hitting it so heavy now that we're older. You know, we have kids and our joints hurt, so we're not quite as crazy as we used to be. But yeah, you know, back in the day, we were all over the place with a bunch of Texas bands, a bunch of people we were friends with. Local Dallas bands like us and Valve went all over the place. Great, great local band. There's another Beef Jerky. We used to play shows with them all over the place. Currently, we've been doing a few shows with a band called The Vandaliers. Here in the next few months, in February, we're taking them to Europe with us. We're going to the UK.
And y'all do really well over there.
You know, the UK, it's been our savior for years and years. Whenever the Bitch song hit, it just took off over there. it's a different world over there, how they treat music and how fans interact with music. But they've just been great for us. And kind of through our ebbs and flows here in the States, they've just always been awesome for us over there.
It's funny how that works, because I mentioned this, I think, in a previous episode about how there's bands that could almost fill trees.
Mm-hmm.
But then when they went over to Europe, they were playing festivals and they were playing packed.
Right. Like I said, it's the fans interact with music differently there, but the way music is delivered over there is different also. So, of course, it's a smaller country. The UK is smaller than Texas. You can fit, what, four of them in Texas or something? And they've got national radio. So if you get on the radio, you're everywhere. Where here in the States, you can get on the radio in Dallas. You can get on the radio in Chicago, but nowhere else. So you kind of have to do that as a city-by-city thing here. The other thing is, whenever we started going over to the UK, there were five video channels that actually played video still. They weren't just playing, you know, clips, and they weren't reality TV shows yet. So there was video channels that were playing
video. And
y'all
have always had some really fun videos.
Yeah.
I know the My Weena video was not able to be played in Japan, or you had a different version.
We had to have two versions.
Yeah. They were playing stuff like that in the UK?
They were playing stuff like that in the UK. They definitely let you push the limits a little bit further in some aspects. The other thing, though, is music listeners. Like, they're not as clicky genre-wise as we are here. So, you know, here, people that like us like pop punk. You know, that's our niche, right? Niche, whatever you want to say it. Over there, there's kids that go, Slipknot and Bowling for Soup are my favorite bands. Like, that just doesn't happen here. It's a weird thing over there. Their genre is broader.
Yeah, well, besides Europe, I mean, we mentioned, you know, Japan and how they also consume Bowling for Soup. What other countries have you toured that you really enjoy?
We've been all over the planet. The only continent we haven't been to is Antarctica.
We can change that, right?
Yeah, I've wondered about that. I just don't know if there's much venues in Antarctica. But Europe's great. We love going there. The festivals in Europe are a blast. We love going to Japan. We love going to Australia. For some reason, it's just harder for us to get there. And we keep on begging, you know, other bands that we're friends with, that they go there. We keep on offering to trade. Hey, if you'll take us back to Japan or Australia, we'll take you to the UK. And, you know, it just is hard to get that off the ground. That being said, we're still working on some of that stuff. But we used to do shows. We're a Navy entertainment band. So we've done shows all over the world with the Navy, where they've flown us to naval bases. And that's how we ended up getting to Middle East, Africa,
sure.
A bunch of different places in Asia.
And that's a good way to grow your base. I mean, by that time, I'm sure you had a huge base anyways. But I know there were several Dallas bands that got on the kind of USO mm-hmm. type circuit.
Yeah.
And it did really well for them.
Yeah. It's one of those things. It ended up being one of my favorite things that we do. It's a lot of fun for us. It's a different schedule than how we normally tour. Normally, we're crammed into a tour bus, and it's day after day after day after day. This is flying and either hotel rooms or staying on the base at, like, the base version of a hotel. But it's not shows every day, but it's stuff every day. And you're right. I mean, at that the point that we're doing this, we have enough songs that most of the people there know us, and they're happy to see us. But when you go play a show in Djibouti, Africa, and the soldiers there hadn't seen or had any entertainment for 6 months, it doesn't matter if they know who we are. They're just happy to have something. And that's an awesome feeling for us to go provide something like that for them. It's very rewarding.
Well, and if I was stuck in the middle of nowhere trying to defend our freedoms, I think I'd rather choose you over Slipknot anyway. So.
Yeah, I mean, maybe a little bit more levity in the situation. Yeah.
So when you're not on tour, I mean, you already said that you guys will put together some songs. You have some good stuff. And how do you go from taking all these demos and ideas that you've roughed in to making an actual album?
Yeah, you know, it's changed over the years. Back in the van days when we were traveling those 300 days a year, you know, Jarrett was working on writing songs in the back of the van, and we'd work something up at soundcheck and maybe play a new song tonight. And, you know, we'd do that quite a bit. And then we'd get home, you know, from a tour, and we're like, hey, we're home for a few days. Let's work on a few more. And then we'd plan a goal of, you know, pick a month, February. In February, we're going to write and record a record. write and record, you know. So maybe we get home and we have 4 songs done, but then in February we'll write 10 more, 12 more, and then go record a record. That's changed, you know, that changed over the years. Once we got to probably A Hangover You Don't Deserve is whenever we had just been touring so much, we said, we're going to take like 6 months off. You know, we're going to go home and we're going to take a breath. And after we take a breath, like a month off, then we'll get together. Then we'll start getting in the studio. Then we'll write something and put it together and actually take some time. So that was a completely different process. And we did that for the next couple of records where we'd go tour for a year and a half. And then we'd come home and take 5-6 months off and write and record a record during that 6 months. And then go tour for a year and a half. And then now we've got to the point where we're not touring for a year and a half anymore. Now we go, hey, next year we're going to tour 2 weeks, 5 different times, you know, and we'll pick out those time frames. And then we'll go, and the year after that, we're going to record a record. So we'll do minimal tours the next year. And that being said, with those different incarnations of recording, we've recorded all over Dallas. We've recorded in Austin. We did a couple of records in Atlanta. There is about a 6-year period. That's when we were doing the 6 months off recording. There's about a 6-year period where we spent more time in Atlanta, or at least as much time in Atlanta recording as we did at home. So Atlanta's kind of a home away from home for us.
When you were first putting together A Hangover You Don't Deserve, I remember meeting y'all again. Thor was doing a story on you for the Dallas Morning News. And I got a chance to shoot that. That's the first time that I really got to know y'all. It was very clear how tight y'all were at that point. I'm wondering, did you notice, I mean, because you said you guys were getting along right from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
But have you noticed a change in the band's dynamic, a change in the friendship over the years?
To an extent, and I don't necessarily think it's a change in our friendship. It's just kind of a change of different people are in different stages of, you know, different seasons of life. I will say, you know, we are extremely close. And like you picked up on, there's time after time after time. We've been to Grammy parties. We were Grammy nominated. We went to the Grammy after parties. We've been to, you know, pretty high profile events that are fun to go to. And when we get to these things, we're all just kind of like, you know, kids in a candy store. Our eyes open up and we all go in different directions and check it out. And then usually within about 30 or 45 minutes, somehow we naturally just gravitate back to the 4 of us hanging out at some spot. 4 of us plus our crew if they're there. You know, we're just a tight-knit group. And after we explore around and say hey and see what's fun to see, we all just end up in the corner together by ourselves.
Yeah, so. Yeah. No, I get that. So I've got 3 boys. They're all real close in age. And they are like their own best friends. And they sit and crack each other up. And they'd be perfectly fine just the 3 of them together. And I remember when we were doing the photography for Hangover and just watching you 4 together, just sitting cracking each other up, like you 4 were the only 4 that mattered. it was clear that there was something special there that you can't break.
That comes from hours and hours and hours of sitting in a van, driving across the desert, hours and hours and hours of loading into a venue with nothing to freaking do and no money to spend, so we can't go do anything. You just kind of learn how to have fun, right? Learn how to joke around. There's so many times where it's like, we're bored, let's crack a beer, and all of a sudden we're having fun, you know? Like, we just learned how to entertain ourselves by being silly and stupid. But, you know, I guess I kind of sidetracked your question of, like, do we all hang out outside of that? And that's where I was saying in different stages of life, you know, Eric and Jarrett palled around all the time for a while, and then Chris and I used to go play golf all the time, and now Rob's in the band, and he has a different relationship with all of us, where he and Jarrett do some things, and Rob and I go have coffee and go have lunch, and, you know, if we're playing a earlier show, we go try to find a bar nearby and have a spicy margarita. Like, we just have figured out different dynamics where we all kind of hang out on our own. Chris, he's just in a spot now where he kind of does his own thing. It's not that he's a homebody. He just does whatever he wants to do. And
yeah, no, I remember, especially on Facebook, as he would post over the years, it was very clear that he was finding his own little spot that he felt comfortable with, him and his dog, and,
yep,
and a handful of musings that he'd post. And then eventually he kind of disappeared from Facebook even. And yeah. I get that. There's a lot of people who feel, especially if you're on stage like that and you're giving so much to so many people, you probably want to have some off time just for you, or just for you and your dog or yeah. whatever.
Yeah. So now that we're at home, you know, Rob, our bass player, lives in Pennsylvania. So, you know, he and I aren't going to the bar every day. But Jarrett and I, we have another podcast we do together. We go play golf together. We go to each other's houses and hang out. And, you know, we're really tight. Chris is just kind of doing his own thing. It's not that we're not still tight with him. He just doesn't go do different things. But whenever we're on tour, it's kind of that same thing that you're seeing. You put the four of us in a room, even though there's nothing to do, and we end up having a good time.
And it turns on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think this would be another good break for a song. Let's see, who did we talk about recently? We talked we talked about Vandaliers.
We're going on tour with them. They're a local, you know, Dallas band that is, they're kind of riding the waves between punk rock and country. I think they can go play a show with a punk rock band and the crowd's going to like them. They can go play a show with a country band and the crowd's going to like them. And they're just fun and they're good.
Well, let's go ahead and play one of their songs then. Okay, so let's talk about some other stuff. Let's just have some fun. I'm going to bring up a few memories.
Okay.
And I remember when we were doing the Hangover album, we photographed at Hotel Zaza. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we wanted to get was y'all kind of like half passed out after you partied a little too hard in the bathroom. And I remember we get everything set up, get the lighting, have the assistants move everything just perfect. And we let Chris be in the bathtub, mm-hmm. and we start shooting. Things are going well. And then all of a sudden we hear... I thought it was so funny that here we are, you know, with all these lights popping and all these directions and move this and move that. And Chris was able to just to fall asleep in the bathtub right in the middle of our shoot.
Yeah, he's always had the ability to just kind of fall asleep at any moment. It's a weird thing where he can fall asleep anywhere, but there's times where he falls asleep, but he still knows what's going on. I'm sure we've all had that, you know. But it works both ways, where there's plenty of times where we've been at a photo shoot or a video shoot or in an interview or something, and like he kind of dozes off. But one time we were on a, we called it a radio tour, but we weren't playing like shows with other bands. We were promoting a record. So one of the record label's reps was driving us from radio station to radio station all across the region. And we spent a week in the car with him, going to 3 or 4 radio stations in different cities each day. And Chris fell asleep in the front seat, and the guy was driving. Run to the Hills by Iron Maiden came on the radio, and we're all joking around. We're probably playing poker in the back of the car or something like that. The A&R guy's driving. Chris is asleep in the front seat, but this song comes on, and as it gets to the drum fill, he's sitting in the front seat, just wakes up, does the air drumming drum fill, and puts his head back down and goes back to sleep. So he's always had an interesting relationship with sleep, where he can either just fall asleep or just wake up and be in the conversation.
Well, he wakes up for the important parts. You can't miss that drum fill.
You can't.
So, just speaking about fun things that we did, do you remember the time? It was winter of 2011. It was maybe February 2011, and y'all came to me, and you were like, we need to get some fresh promo photos. Let's do some stuff in your studio and whatever else you can think of. And for some reason, I had the dumbest idea, and I was like, let's go to White Rock Lake. There was still snow on the ground. The lake must have measured maybe like 34 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yeah.
And I was like, let's go to White Rock Lake and climb in the lake and take some photos.
Yeah.
I don't know why we did so many dumb things, but for some reason, it really worked out.
That was one of those, going into it, we're always like, yeah, great, sure, anything. Well, let's try it, right?
And I always tried to push y'all.
And that lake was so cold that, you know, we took our...
Y'all stripped down. I think there were some boxers, and that was it.
Well, I think we started just doing, like, our shoes off and, like, kind of pulling the pants legs up a little bit. And, man, that water was cold.
Oh, yeah.
And you kept on being like, yeah, you guys need to go a little bit deeper. Okay, let's roll the pant legs up a little bit. Yeah, you guys need to be deeper. You're like, are you serious? And because the water is cold, and we were kind of like, come on. And it kept on pushing us a little bit deeper. So finally, I think we did come out and take some pants off and get down to our boxers and get further out there. And by that time, I think we were just numb. And we're like, okay, fine. Now we're out here. Great. And thank God you did, because those photos ended up awesome.
Oh, yeah. I love that one. And the funny thing is, we didn't really even plan for it. Because I remember when y'all started a strip, and I had to send John back to the house to go get towels for afterwards. And, you know, thank God we lived, you know, like 2 minutes from the lake. Because when we got out, we needed those towels. That was cold.
Yeah, I definitely, we were definitely numb on that one, yeah.
Yeah, but, and then I started thinking, I mean, I photographed, you're the only band that I photographed in the shower. Mm-hmm. You remember we were at House of Blues, and I think I was doing that for a cover for Quick, if I remember correctly. But I was like, you know, let's do something fun, let's do something different. And the only thing in the green room is a couch and a bathroom.
Yeah.
And so we were like, okay, well, let's go to the bathroom. And we took some absurd toilet photos, which I saw one of those wound up running in Japan on some music magazine. And then we were like, Why don't we get naked in the shower?
Yeah, you know, like we've talked about, we're kind of a silly, fun band. We'll do whatever and we'll try anything. We've had a lot of photo shoots in bathrooms. different countries, different continents, we've done photo shoots in bathrooms. But I remember that when you're talking about it in the House of Blues bathroom, ended up being a really cool shot. Also, we used that for a lot of stuff.
I saw somebody wound up getting a hold of a decent enough quality file of that photo, and they turned it into a shower curtain for their shower.
That's funny.
Yeah, that was hilarious to see.
That's great. That's like the people that do that, I'm going to take a picture of you and put it on my shirt, and then you take a picture of me wearing your shirt and put that on. Yeah.
But I just thought that was hilarious. They get to shower every day with you. So.
Yeah. Well, we've had a lot of fun doing the shoots with you. One of my favorites is we did the licking the pole for the Christmas story.
Yeah. Those were always the best. Quick was like a goofy, it was like the Dallas Observer meets Mad Magazine or National Lampoon. Yeah. And so we had a lot of flexibility to just do goofy stuff. And they did the Christmas, kind of a nod to the best movies. And y'all got to be a Christmas story.
Yeah.
And you got to be the kids licking the pole.
Yeah.
And so we went down to Dealey Plaza because that was the closest pole to the Dallas Morning News building at the time. We had some fun with that. I don't think we sterilized that pole first, but you seem to have survived.
Yeah, well, you know, who knows what all other things we've had in our mouth. So.
Well, I will say this, as well as you being the only band that I photographed in a shower, you're also the only band that I photographed with a giant penis. So that video shoot for My Wiener and us doing promo photos, and I think it wound up being on the cover of the single. That was something different. I think we did that at your house, didn't we?
We were. I was about to say. So leading up to that video shoot, we thought it was going to be hilarious to have a big penis walking up and down the street. Jarrett asked me if we could use my house as a location on the shoot. And the way it was pitched to me for the video shoot is we were going to be doing kind of run and gun type shooting across town. We're going to go to this location, shoot something real fast. Go to this location, shoot something real fast. Go to this location, shoot something real fast. Can we stop at your house and shoot something during the day, you know, be in there for 30 minutes, an hour? Yeah, cool. No problem. Let's do that. I agreed to that. Somehow that turned up to a full production truck showing up at my house at like 6:30 in the morning, cameras on tracks, all sorts of stuff. My house ended up being the only location for the video shoot. I was kind of living a low-key life at that time. A lot of my neighbors didn't know that I was in this band. And all of a sudden there's a 9-foot penis walking up and down the street with cameras, and we have our drums and amps and everything set up in the middle of the street, and we're blocking traffic. And they figured out real quick what was going on. But
I was going to say, when you said run and gun, we're going to go run and gun here and run and gun there. And when I showed up to the set, that was not a run and gun set. There was a full production truck. It was there's no way you had to have been there at your house. There was way too much to move.
Yeah, I got rookie dude is what they say. it was fine. The video turned out awesome. There was a little bit of damage from the tracks and stuff that I guess is the production company ended up covering. But yeah, my wife wasn't happy about it, and you know, I'm kind of just roll with the punches. You've seen us be in kind of crazy situations before. Everything BFS is just kind of who knows what's going to happen. So I think I took it a lot better than she did. But
yeah. As far as run and gun is concerned, I think we have done a good job with that, because I remember for Hangover, we had some of the locations set. Like we had the dry cleaners set ahead of time. We had the Lulabee's store window set.
Yep.
We had Zaza set. But then the rest of it, I was like, you know what? Let's just go around and have some fun. And so we wound up shooting on that big escalator at Mockingbird and 75. We wound up shooting on train tracks next to it was over there in some semi-rough area.
Did we end up on the fairgrounds on that one at some point?
I'm
maybe thinking of something
else. Yeah, no, we didn't go to the fair for that one.
Okay.
But, I mean, we did just wind up at random places,
all
for
over.
Sure. As a matter of fact, I remember it was the album we worked on after that, too, the one Sorry for Partying.
Mm-hmm.
And that one was kind of the same way, where we had half of it set up and half of it we just go out and run and gun and see what happens. That one, it's funny because every once in a while my dad will ask, who was that band who came over and used my pool?
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Your pool was what ended up being the toilet, right?
The jumping in the toilet was from jumping into the pool.
Yeah.
And then also for the No Habla single is a pool shot. And a bunch of your tour posters wound up being that. But it's funny because I remember after we got done with that, and then we were like, well, let's just go to Denton and just see what we can find, have some fun. By that time, you guys were so sunburned.
Oh, yeah.
And it was... You looked like you needed ER.
Because I was after the My Wiener video, right, that we recorded. Is that why we were sunburned? Was it from the My Wiener video shoot?
Well, I think it was just because we had spent so much time at the pool.
Okay.
And I don't remember there being any cloud cover or anything. Okay. It was just straight sun, straight Texas summer sun.
Sure. I guess I'm kind of blending the two experiences together.
It all blends in together. I mean, because my photos showed up on that the Goes to the Movies. They showed up on the Best Of that Jai put out. You know, it all blends together at some point.
If you go back and watch the Maiwena video on the live shots, you can tell because we had done, maybe it was the day before that we did all those photos. And then we did the Maiwena video the next day. And so we were already sunburned, but then we're out in the middle of the street again for hours and hours recording this video. So by the end of that video, you can see that we're all just, you know, we're red like lobsters.
Yeah, yeah. You know, we talked so much about the band, and we talked about how you got to where you are today, but I don't think we ever really talked about what inspired you truly besides, I mean, we mentioned Billy Joel.
Sure.
You know, it was funny because when you mentioned that, I was like, I had an exact same moment. It didn't make me pick up the drums or anything, but I remember as a kid, maybe like 6 years old, and we went into a Waffle House off of I-30, and they had a jukebox, and I think somehow I just randomly picked it, you know, but Billy Joel came on. I was like, oh my God, this is the best thing ever.
That's so funny.
And yeah, so I guess tell me what else inspired you. What artist or band or song do you feel inside you when you're playing? Like, I think of how we all kind of have a spirit animal, a soul brother that we're akin to, mm-hmm. that we feel kind of coming through us. I call it a mixture of the two. It's what is your soul animal?
Man, you know, when you go like, what's your... what inspired you? That's so hard because like different times and different ages and you know, at an early age, just so much different bands and artists and genres and styles. But you know, if I think back to like being a kid and growing up, I think I can kind of narrow it down to a few different things. And I'm kind of thankful, like, the world we grew up in, there's less. There's just less noise. There's less options. There's less, you know, we weren't in the car with our iPods and we didn't have, you know, the Wi-Fi and YouTube on hand. So it's like you kind of were left with either whatever your parents were listening to or whatever records they had at home or, you know, 8-tracks or cassettes in the car.
Yeah, I got a lot of exposure to 50s and 60s music and early 70s because my dad listened to K-Love in the car all the time.
Yep.
And so, I mean, that's how I found out about like Elvis and the Beatles and the Supremes and Marvin Gaye. And I think there's something, like you said, there's something about not having so much bombarding you from every single direction.
Yeah. And, you know, I think about this a lot and try to answer your question at the same time. Back in those days, like, I just always loved the Beach Boys were one thing, but then that other 50s kind of rock and roll, whether it be, you know, Buddy Holly or Everly Brothers.
Big Bopper.
You know, yeah, I just always liked that stuff. And I think if you go back and listen to artists from the 90s, 2000s, our age, whatever, I think you can hear how everyone kind of our age had a similar experience. You can listen to a song and be like, okay, that came from the Beatles, that came from Buddy Holly, that came from this. You know, even though it's completely different now, they've
taken it. No, you're right, 100%. Weezer, you can hear Beach Boys in. A lot of the punk pop, you do still pick up that early, you know, birth of rock and roll.
I think we all, whether it be Slipknot, like we talked about earlier, or it be Rancid, or it be, you know, whoever. I think everyone kind of had similar influences because there's just less options. Okay, those kids now that are riding in the car listening to us with our 4,000 songs in our iPod, our iPhone on shuffle, like what's their background going to be? And then whenever they get interested, they have the world at their hands. So what's their influence going to be? And what is music going to be in 20 years? And can you tell, like, it's going to be so random, I would think. There's not going to be the, hey, here's the 20 bands that influenced everybody.
But, you know, there is a parallel to a certain degree because everyone watching TikTok, when a song takes off on TikTok, all these kids are all of a sudden into it. Or a song takes off on Stranger Things, a Metallica song that they had no clue existed until they heard it on Stranger Things. Yeah. I mean, all of a sudden, it's a major hit again.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, there's still going to be cultural ideas to grasp onto, and there'll be some kind of similar viewpoint. But, you know, I just wonder with the vastness of things that they're going to be exposed to, what that's going to translate to in the future of music.
Well, let's play them something they probably haven't heard. You mentioned Buddy Holly before, so let's throw it way back in here, because Buddy Holly is Texas for sure.
He's always been one of my favorites.
Perfect. Let's play that.
Hey, can you go pa-pow, 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 like it? Yeah, do that right before the first part there. Think it over what you just said. Think it over in your pretty little head. Are you sure that I'm not the one? Is your love real or only fun? You think it over, yes, think it over. A lonely heart grows cold and old. Think it over and let me know. Think it over, but don't be slow. Just remember all birds and bees go by twos through life's mysteries. You think it over, yes, think it over. A lonely heart. Hole and hole. Think it over and think of me. Think it over. A happy day when you and I think it's one and kiss the blues goodbye. You think it over, yes, think it over. A lonely heart grows cold and old. Think it over, think it over, think it over.
All right, well, that was a nice throwback. Let's talk about some of the venues, because, I mean, you've played all over the world. I know that I shot you at the State Fair main stage at least twice over the years. I've shot you down in Artist Square. I've shot you, God, I've shot you so many different places. I could sit here for like 30 minutes and list them off. What are some of the places that you played? What were some of your favorite places you played?
Sure. So, you know, the bands said historically our favorite place to play is in Manchester. Manchester Academy. It's just one of those places. It's not even that it's like our favorite place. It's just the show always ends up being so great there. The crowd's great. The energy's great. So that's just been one of our favorite places. I've always loved playing the House of Blues Chicago. It's just such a cool room from our perspective. Whenever you look out, it's kind of a what do you call it? Like a It's like a three-tiered theater.
Sure.
I can't think what the right word for it is, but it's just a beautiful spot. It's a cool view for us to play to. There's other places that are just good to play, but in Dallas, Indie Bellum, some of the funnest shows we've ever had were back in the Clearview days, back in the Curtain Club days. Trees has always been an awesome show.
Trees is a place for so many people. I mean, you can ask almost anybody who's walked through Deep Ellum at one point in the last 30 years and say, what were some of your favorite places? And it's always Trees is on that list.
It's famous worldwide. So we'll travel to different countries, for sure, different states, but all over the place. And whenever we're talking to people that don't know us, and we go, oh, we're from Dallas, they'll go, oh, have you played Trees? Or do you know of Trees? So, I mean, it's just iconic.
And did you see J.R. Ewing there?
Yeah. You know, one of my favorite places to see shows back in the day whenever I was younger was the old Bomb Factory. You know, ended up closing for a while. It's cool that they ended up opening it back up, and now it's the factory. But
I always liked Deep Ellum Live.
Deep Ellum Live.
I saw Tripping Daisy there, and the way the stage was set up at that time,
yep.
it really lent itself to a good show.
I forgot about that. That's like two of my favorite Dallas shows that I went to go see were at Deep Ellum Live, so that's a great spot. For us playing wise, now the factory is just so nice. You know, it's a big room, but the hospitality there is so great for a touring band. whenever we're crammed into a tour bus and there's, you know, 12 of us on this bus plus a dog, it gets kind of tight quarters. And a lot of these venues we go to is a little small room with a couple of, you know, love seats for people. It's just crammed.
They've got a decent backstage back there.
You get back there, they've got laundry for you. They've got games to play. They treat you great. It's a very comfortable place.
Well, the cool thing about the factory, BFS and BTS had played that venue. So there you go. We need to find some more three letter bands that have played Bomb Factory and
that start with me and end in S.
Yes, there you go. there's going to be at least the potential for 24 more.
There you go.
That's pretty cool. I really appreciate the time that you spent with us. I know that you've got for the first airing of this, people can catch your upcoming show back down there in Deep Ellum. Tell us about that for a second. If you're hearing this streaming, you missed it, but you'll be able to catch them again, I promise. What's this show that you're about to do?
Yeah, so we got the Deep Ellum Music Festival coming up, and you know, happy to be back in Dallas playing a show. We're home kind of for the rest of the year, so it's nice to have one little show kind of for the holiday season for us. But we're playing on November 18th in Deep Ellum, and it should be a really fun time.
Yeah, and I think that is on the corner of Main Street and Good Latimer, if I remember correctly. I'll definitely try to be there. I don't ever miss y'all if I can help it.
You know, I think it's going to be an interesting show to catch us at, because I think it's Run DMC. And
I saw, yeah, 50 Years of Hip Hop is going to be with it as well. That'll be great. I'm a huge hip hop. I'm Gen X, and hip hop exploded when I was first figuring out what I was in life, and hip-hop is part of me.
100% same thing. So, yeah, I'm excited about that. I think it'll be some cool acts to go catch.
So I got to ask, because the last show that I photographed, your wife and your daughter were there. Your daughter joined you on stage. Are they going to join you for this?
I pretty much guarantee my wife's going to be there. I don't know if my daughter's going to be there, but it was a lot of fun having her come up. I appreciate you grabbing those photos.
Oh, that was so cute. I loved it. I absolutely loved it. To see the joy in your face and to see the admiration in her face as she's there on stage watching you work and doing what you do, that it was just so cute.
Another level of how cool that is for me is my son used to do that. So, you know, he's 12 now. He's a little too cool for school at this point. But whenever he was her age...
That only gets worse.
I'm sure. Whenever he was her age, there's a few shows we did, other festivals around Dallas, and he was up there, and I've got cool photos of him sitting there, you know, hitting a snare drum or a floor tom or a cymbal or something. He was actually playing with me, but it's just cool to kind of have them both at the same age doing the same thing, kind of sitting at the same spot. So
yeah, it's always neat when people can do that. I shot the Spree was playing Fry Street Fair, and Stella, you know, Tim and Julie's, she was just tiny, maybe like a year or two at most of the time, and she came up and joined them on stage, and I got some fun photos of that. And I mean, now she's an adult, and yeah. To know that you can one day look back on that and just realize how special those moments were.
Yeah.
I used to take my boys to my shoots at the Pro Museum. I was the pros photographer for 8 years, and they loved it. And eventually it got to be so regular that they were like, oh, we got to go to the Pro again. And now that they haven't been in a few years, you know, my youngest was like, maybe we should go back to the Pro again. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And I think your kids will look back on that time and realize how special it was.
Yeah. It's fun now watching my 6-year-old daughter, like you said, watch me enjoy the moment, take it in. She feels special being on stage.
Well, it is special. It's a cool thing.
She's proud of me and proud of her, and she thinks it's cool. It's kind of weird watching my son be too cool for school. Now, he's just at that weird age.
Yeah,
he's 12. He doesn't want the spotlight on him.
And
but he
15,
used to,
16, 17, I guarantee you it gets worse,
yeah.
And then it gets better.
Whenever he was doing that, he thought he was in the band. So whenever we were going up on stage, he'd be like, what song are we starting with? And he thought he was in it.
Well, he kind of was. I mean, there's 2, 3, sometimes 10,000 people in the crowd, and there's 4 plus 1. There's 5 people on stage at that point.
100%. And not only just me, but the other 3 guys in the band welcome him and make him part of it. And whenever we do the photograph opportunity, he runs out there or she runs out there with us. And it's not like hey, what are you doing with your kids on stage? It's just... You know,
yeah, no, that's
like
great.
back to the what we said earlier. It's like we're not worried about perfection; we're worried about having fun.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think we had fun. Let's go ahead and wrap it up. We will play. Well, what do you think we should play?
I think we should pick another Texas band. And how about Fastball, another great Texas band that we've always had a lot of fun with and have written some songs with, and just a great band.
Oh, that's a great idea. And they've got so many, besides their two biggest hits, they've got so many beautiful, just wonderful deep cuts. Let's go ahead and pick, let's pick this one. And hopefully y'all will join us next week. And thank you so much, Gary.
Hey, thanks, Jason.